This is a story about a soldier on leave from the army who trades his old violin for a magic book that can tell the future and make him rich. But this is not just a story about trading an old violin. This is really a story about temptation. Joseph, when he trades his old violin, does not know that the man with the butterfly net is really the devil. But he soon learns that appearances can be deceiving, and giving in to temptation can be very, very dangerous.
Down a long and dusty road, a soldier travels with his load. 10 days leave he has to spend at home with family and with friends. Homeward bound, tramping o'er the ground. Miles he's come, but miles to go. Progress seems so very slow. Joseph stops at the banks of a stream, sits down, and opens his large duffel bag. Oh, what a mess! But digging around, he finds his lucky medal of St. Joseph, his patron saint, and then the photograph of his girl. She gave it to him the day he went off to war. And now he takes out his old violin and begins to play. Now Joseph is not alone. A little old man with a butterfly net suddenly appears. He has been listening to the violin music and offers Joseph a trade.
Young man, that fiddle of yours sounds so fine. Would you trade it for this book of mine?
Joseph is suspicious. He inspects the book. Why? It's filled with information about stocks and bonds. Let me see. Royal Crown Armor is at 63. But wait. This says today's date is the 2nd. That's not for 5 days yet. Not as I reckoned. So, this book tells the future. I can invest my money and be rich, rich. And for my fiddle, why, it's a steal. Here's my violin. Let's shake on it. It's a deal. But when the old man tries to play the violin, it makes no sound at all. So he speaks to Joseph and makes him an offer.
Come to my house, spend 2 or 3 days. You can teach me to play, and I'll teach you the ways to use your new book. Fine food and fine wines. Do come. Take a look.
Joseph is won over. He climbs into the old man's coach, and before he realizes it, they're in midair, flying through the clouds, speeding across the golden blue sky. Fast and faster they ride until time stands still. And Joseph finds himself at the top of a hill, overlooking his village. He walks down into his village. He dances along the streets. People stop and stare at him. They run to their homes. They lock their shutters and slam their doors shut. Oh, my uniform must look a terrible sight to have given them all such a fright. Ah, there's my old friend Arthur. Hello there. He doesn't seem to hear me. Oh, well, he's busy working in his garden. Ah, there's my house. I'll go and surprise Mother. From the window, his mother sees Joseph standing at the garden gate. But suddenly, she screams a silent scream and pulls the curtains closed. She thinks she's seen a ghost. He turns to look over the garden fence. There's my fiancée, but with a baby in her arms, and married to my best friend, Ben. Oh, has there been some great trick that's been played upon me then? Not 3 days, 3 years I've been away. The devil's fool have I been dumb enough to play. I should have been the good soldier, on my guard against the likes of him, Lucifer, Satan, Mephisto. How foolish I have been. I've even given up my violin. It's true. Now what on earth am I going to do?
Thank you.
The devil, now dressed as a prosperous merchant, approaches the saddened soldier. Joseph recognizes him and rushes violently towards him, raising his fists.
That's not wise. Do behave. Have you forgotten what I told you about the book? Where is it?
In my duffel bag.
Well, then, that's all you'll need. You're a soldier, aren't you? So, act like one, then. Attention! That's fine. Platoon, fall in. Stand easy. Remove your jacket and cap. I'll get you another. Don't fall out. We're not finished yet. Attention! Now, take out that book. Be careful. It's worth a fortune. Tuck it under your arm. That book there is yours. This fiddle is mine. Money for music. You'll learn in good time.
Joseph opens the book. The words flow like honey. Riches indeed. And lots of money. Joseph uses the book to go into business, traveling and selling goods at cheap pre-war prices. Ladies and gentlemen, silks and soft satins, gold, silver, and brass, your heart's desires, you need only ask. The book proves true to the devil's predictions, and Joseph becomes an extremely wealthy man. Yet he remains unhappy. Wealth has not filled the empty place in his heart left by the loss of his girl, his mother, and his old violin. Angrily, Joseph hurls the book onto the dusty road. Now the devil, disguised as an old woman, comes forth, picks up the book, dusts it off, and holds it out to Joseph.
You might find this useful. Would you care to trade? Here in my bag, I've quite a nice spade. Not interested? Well, how about this pin? This medal? This photo? This violin?
Joseph snatches the violin from the devil and tries to play. But the violin is silent. He has lost the power to make music. In despair, Joseph throws the violin to the ground, tears the book to shreds, then utters a heartfelt moan. The book is gone forever. But the devil retrieves the violin, and playing triumphantly, he dances away into the distance, leaving the soldier standing all alone. Down another dusty road, our soldier tramps without his load. Trudging onward all the day, where he's heading, who can say? Any future he can find must leave memories behind. Some days later, our soldier arrives at a village where the town crier is addressing the population.
The king thus proclaims it, 'tis he who has said that the princess is ill and just lies in bed. Whosoever can cure her, him she shall wed.
Joseph sets off for the palace. He knocks at the door. Says the guard,
"No more quacks. I've seen fakers galore. There've been dozens of doctors. She won't see one more."
"But I'm from the army, from the medical corps."
"Oh, it's all right then. Perhaps you have the cure."
"Take me to your king. I'll cure his daughter for sure." But who is this at the princess's door? Another physician, well-dressed, tuxedo-clad, black tie, a rival for the princess's hand? Wait, I know this fellow now. It was his book that caused me such grief. His influence has robbed me as a thief would take from me my life. But I will cure the princess, then make her my wife. Come, sir, do you play cards? You may set the bet. And as you win, the poorer I might get. I know that as I lose all the money I have made through that diabolical book of his, I shall win back my soul. As the devil, he must win at cards, so he won't refuse to play.
Ah, sir, I see you win once more. On you, I cannot seem to score. My money's almost gone, but I'd like to bet again. Perhaps you might wager that old violin? Now the devil grows bored with winning, and Joseph realizes this. And so, when he deals the cards, he outsmarts the weary devil.
Ace, king, queen, jack, and ten, you've lost, and the violin is mine again. Now that I have forsaken all my wealth, my violin will play the princess back to health. Joseph plays his fiddle as he's never played before, with the healing power of music that lies beneath the score.
Thank you.
the princess cannot resist the magic of Joseph's violin. She rises from her bed and, moving to the rhythms, is cured of her lethargic illness. And now Joseph turns to the devil and begins to play. Entranced by the music, the devil dances and dances till he can dance no more, then swirls and falls, exhausted, on the palace floor. But the devil, if down, cannot be counted out. His fist raised up at Joseph, he begins to shout.
In this kingdom you may well be free. But if you depart, then you'll belong to me. For should you leave this realm one day, you will be mine forever. That's the price you'll pay.
Time passes. Joseph and the princess live in perfect harmony. But Joseph has not forgotten his past. My mother did not even recognize me then. She thought I was a ghost. But surely this time she would. If beyond the kingdom we could go, would the devil ever really know? Then let us go discreetly, whispered the princess. This will bring us joy completely. And so Joseph and his princess bride walk towards the castle garden gate. They stop just before leaving the grounds, turning their heads to glance at the drawbridge, the gleaming turrets, and the glistening windows of their chambers. Joseph is first to cross the threshold, the first to pass beyond the gate. But as his footsteps grate upon the gravel, Joseph hears the old familiar music, which draws him like a magnet away from his beloved bride. It is, you can surely solve the riddle, the devil playing Joseph's fiddle. Now he's trapped. A veil of musical strings hides Joseph's mind and heart from precious things. His princess's voice he can no longer hear. Her gentle touch and warmth replaced by frozen fear. Her face, her hair, her laugh, her smile, now to him forever lost. Joseph's last temptation bought at too great a cost. She calls his name, grasps vainly at his sleeve. As cold as granite, a statue of a soldier on his leave.
Stravinsky was brilliant and talented, charismatic and sophisticated. On the one hand, he would tell you that he had a miserable childhood. His parents ignored him, and it was only his nanny and the servants, and sometimes his relatives, that cared for him. On the other hand, he was enormously fortunate. His father was a very famous bass with the Imperial Russian Opera. Stravinsky grew up in St. Petersburg, listening to his father learn operatic role after operatic role right in their apartment. And perhaps even more importantly, his father acquired a free pass that allowed young Stravinsky to attend all the rehearsals at the opera house any time he wanted. And Stravinsky went all the time. Stravinsky's famous father did not think his son was very talented musically. He believed that criminal law would be a far more suitable profession for his son. However, Stravinsky always hated school. He claimed that in his 4 years at the university, he attended only 50 classes. That's about one a month. But being at the university was not a waste of time for Stravinsky. There, Stravinsky and the son of Rimsky-Korsakov, then the most famous composer in Russia, became friends. Soon, Stravinsky began to spend time at the Rimsky-Korsakov's home. The great composer encouraged the teenager. But because Rimsky-Korsakov and Stravinsky's father were both colleagues and friends, and he knew that Stravinsky's father wanted his son to study law, Rimsky-Korsakov only agreed to give young Stravinsky formal lessons when he was 18, after the death of Stravinsky's father. St. Petersburg was an exciting place to be during the first decade of the 20th century. The city was alive with musical soirees where modern music was performed, and young people were creating journals discussing modern literature and the new styles of painting. Stravinsky was in the middle of it all. Then, in 1909, at the age of 27, something extraordinary happened. The greatest impresario of the time, Sergei Diaghilev, was visiting from Paris, and he heard some of Stravinsky's music. The following year, he commissioned Stravinsky to compose a full-length ballet score for the Russian Ballet Festival that Diaghilev was producing in Paris. The collaboration was so successful that within 4 years, Stravinsky had composed music for three great ballets, Firebird, Petrushka, and The Rite of Spring. The most famous story about Stravinsky, and perhaps in all of 20th century music, occurred in 1913 at the premiere of his ballet, The Rite of Spring. On the first night, the audience came expecting ballet and beautiful music, but when the curtain went up, there were a group of knock-kneed maidens with long braids jumping up and down to music that sounded, to many people, like it was filled with wrong notes. Half the Paris audience thought it was exciting and innovative, but the other half thought it was horrible, and a riot actually broke out in the theater. There were catcalls and arguments. Ladies whacked men with their fans, and cards were exchanged for duels. By the end of the performance, there was such chaos in the theater that the music could no longer be heard. The furious Stravinsky retreated to backstage, only to find the choreographer standing on a chair counting loudly for the dancers, because even they could no longer hear the music. More than that was happening in Europe, however. The First World War was about to begin, and Stravinsky decided that the safest place to be was not Russia and not France, but Switzerland. It is there that he composed The Soldier's Tale, or L'Histoire du Soldat, as it is known in the original French. Together with the Swiss writer Rémuse, they created their new version of the Faustian myth, that age-old story of a man who sells his soul to the devil. When Stravinsky left Russia for Paris, the old aristocratic social order was still in place. The Tsar, the great aristocratic wealth, the cosmopolitan society, and the peasantry that supported it would be swept away by the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917. Stravinsky would never return to Russia to live, but the Russia that he had known would be gone forever by the end of World War I. After the war, Stravinsky returned to Paris and began composing in a neoclassical style. At that time, many artists were returning to the old order, hoping to bring reason and order back into the world after the terrible upheavals of the world's most horrific war to date. Stravinsky became a French citizen in 1934, but then, with the outbreak of World War II, Stravinsky immigrated to the United States and eventually became an American citizen and lived there until his death in 1971. Stravinsky was very fortunate. He always had commissions to compose new works. He often guest conducted and performed as a pianist. He was also known as a multilingual, highly cultured man who knew a great deal about literature and art as well as music. It is said that he was a charming dinner companion and guest. Stravinsky is undoubtedly the most important composer of the 20th century. He is to music what Picasso is to art. He composed in every popular genre and musical style and was brilliant in every one. Miraculously, his works that are over 100 years old still sound modern today. Stravinsky was always interested in being on the cutting edge, especially in the field of dance music, so we think he would have liked this.
wind, tramping over the ground. Digging around his lucky medal, photograph of his girl, his old violin, and begins to play. Joseph finds himself at the top of a hill overlooking his village.
The king thus proclaims it is he who has said that the princess is ill and just lies in bed.
The Soldier's Tale is a theater piece for narrator, two actors, and a dancer, with a remarkable musical score. The instrumental ensemble consists of just seven players, yet Stravinsky, with great economy, has covered all the families of instruments in the symphony orchestra. Strings are represented by the violin and double bass, winds by the clarinet and bassoon, brass by the trumpet and trombone, and percussion by just one player, with five different drums, cymbals, tambourine, and a triangle. The narrator's speech might also be considered a percussion instrument, as it is rhythmic and often rhymes. When The Soldier's Tale was written, Stravinsky was best known for his three ballets, The Firebird, Petrushka, and The Wildly Adventuresome Rite of Spring. The inclusion of dissonances, harsh or unpleasant combinations of notes, and irregular rhythms were already hallmarks of the new Stravinsky sound. The Soldier's Tale is made up largely of marches and dances. The march that begins our musical tale introduces our soldier marching home on leave. Marches are counted in two. Listen to the bass as it establishes the tempo. Let's listen to the opening and see whether you can hear the bass line. ¶¶ But Stravinsky's march does not stay in two. After 14 measures, he changes the meter, giving the march a little hiccup. Let me show you how Stravinsky has notated this hiccup. It is counted like this. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, it is not surprising that Stravinsky included dances in the soldier's tale. Everyone loves dance music, and as the composer, Stravinsky decided that the princess could be brought to her feet and cured by dancing. So he composed this suite of dances, the tango, the waltz, and the ragtime. The tango and the ragtime were both very new dances. Stravinsky was always interested in the latest trends in all the arts. Both dances are in two. So Stravinsky separated them by the ever-popular waltz that is counted in three to add variety. These three dances run into each other, so you have to listen carefully to identify when Stravinsky changes from the tango to the waltz to the ragtime. First comes the tango. The tango is a South American dance that came to Europe from Buenos Aires in the early 20th century. The original tango instrumental ensemble usually consisted of two violins, piano, double bass, and two bandoneons. The bandoneon is an Argentinian concertina that looks like a small square accordion with buttons on both ends. In The Soldier's Tale, Stravinsky has only one violin, so he writes double stops and even triple stops, which are two or three notes played at one time, making a single violin sound like more than one. Now, listen to how the tango begins so you will recognize it the next time you hear The Soldier's Tale. The next dance the soldier plays for the princess is a very fast waltz. You will note that the tango was counted in two, but the waltz is counted in three and sounds like this. Waltzes were danced in ballrooms and in ballets and were always very popular. It is that 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3 that tells you that the dance has changed to a waltz. Listen. The final dance is a ragtime. Ragtime combines the American band music of Sousa's time with the African-American music of the late 19th century. The result is music with a ragged or syncopated beat. Arthur Pryor, a well-known trombone player with John Philip Sousa's band, was a great promoter of ragtime. You can hear why when you listen to the trombone parts in ragtime. Listen. Now, listen to how the ragtime begins. Towards the end of our story, there is a chorale. A church-like hymn meant to give the listener the feeling that everything will end well, namely, the traditional happy ending. You may have heard Bach's famous chorale, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. Listen. Now listen to Stravinsky's chorale. But as we know, that's not the way the story ends. So Stravinsky closes the piece with one last march, with the devil triumphantly playing the soldier's violin.
The International Children's Arts Network, ICAN, is made possible by the Herbert A. Templeton Foundation, the Oregon Cultural Trust, the Brookby Foundation, and the Oregon Community Foundation. ICAN, poetry, story time, and music for kids.
KQAC HD2 Portland 89.9.
KQOC HD2 Glenydon Beach 88.1.
KSLC HD2 McMinnville 90.3.
And KQHR HD2 The Dells and Hood River 88.1.